Radio Prague News.
Parts of the Moravian town of Olomouc have been flooded by meter-high water. Hundreds of evacuees throughout the country have been unable to return to their homes because of the flood situation, and the waters from the Elbe River have been causing havoc in the town of Mělník, 30 kilometers north of Prague. Around one-fifth of the town of Olomouc in the east of the country was hit by floodwaters after an embankment holding back the raging Morava River gave way during Saturday night. A wave of water flooded into the lowest-lying parts of the historic city, home to 100,000 inhabitants. In some places, the water is said to be up to 1 meter deep. A local official has confirmed that indeed 20% of the town has been hit. Earlier, several thousand people were evacuated ahead of the floods, with more joining them during the night. The level of the Morava River has now stabilized, but the situation is said to remain critical because other embankments could still give way. The Czech army has been helping reinforce flood defenses, but further evacuations may be necessary. In other parts of the country, hundreds have been unable to return to their homes because of the situation with the floods. Emergency situations have been declared by half the country's regions after rivers swelled dangerously midweek because of rain and melting snow. Although the situation has now stabilized somewhat, the Elbe River in the north of Bohemia, the region of Uzký nad Labem, remains the exception. Regional authorities there have declared emergency alert from the Czech Republic's border with Germany to around 40 kilometers north of Prague. And the Elbe's waters are also causing havoc in the town of Mělník, 30 kilometers north of Prague, where some 2,000 are expected to evacuate in the coming hours. Some 100 police officers have been helping residents to prepare to leave the area. The nearby Spolana chemical plant in Neratovice is also in danger of being hit by floodwater from the Elbe. The plant ceased operations days ago in anticipation of the flood scenario. And later on Sunday, the cabinet will meet to discuss further steps. And 5 people have now died as a result of the floods in the Czech Republic or flood-related accidents, the latest case being a 55-year-old man found dead on the Morava River. The man, reportedly homeless, is believed to have drowned in floodwaters near Zábřeh. An autopsy will be conducted. In other news, the bird flu virus has been confirmed in a 5th dead swan that was found in the South Bohemian region of České Budějovice. The news was released by Josef Duben, spokesman for the State Veterinary Administration. A sample has been sent for testing to the European Union's reference laboratory in Weybridge, Britain, to confirm whether or not the flu is the deadly H5N1 strain, dangerous for humans. Tests on one dead swan, the first case in the Czech Republic found in Hluboká nad Vltavou, South Bohemia, confirmed the presence of the pathogenic virus. I'm Jan Wellinger, and that's the end of the news.
You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Jan Pulkrabek, and today we answer your questions and comments in Mailbox. And we also look back on a good friend of Radio Prague, former senator, physician, and translator Jaroslava Mouzerová. Stay tuned.
In this week's mailbox, we have 2 important things to do. First, we need to announce the winner of our March competition and read a new question for April. But even more importantly, today we will announce the question for Radio Prague's annual competition, in which you can win a trip for 2 to Prague. In March, we got a record number of emails telling us the name of the father of genetics. Unfortunately, we can read from only a few of them, as we have less time today. So, Job Nyangao from Kenya sent us this answer.
Gregor Johann Mendel was born on July 22, 1822, in Moravia, Austria. He had his early education in a monastery in Brünn, now called Brno, and later studied science and mathematics at the University of Vienna. He graduated in 1840 and returned to the monastery in Brno as a monk. Mendel carried out his legendary experiments on garden pea plants in the monastery garden from 1857 to 1865. He published his research paper containing his observations and conclusions in 1866. They are now known as Mendel's Laws.
And Dennis Mercer from Canada writes,
Mendel's work with pea plants is well known to students of biology, and his work was so brilliant and unprecedented at the time that it took 34 years for the rest of the scientific community to catch up. So brilliant and intelligent, in fact, that Gregor Mendel's simple experiments with the garden pea instigated the science of genetics and answered many of Darwin's questions. It took a Czech to discover this and establish the modern science we now have today in the 20th century.
And this is what David Eldridge from England wrote.
I didn't have to go to the internet, nor even books, to know that Gregor Mendel is known as the father of genetics. I can remember teachers at two schools I went to as a child getting quite excited when explaining to the class about Mendel and his pea plants. Peas and genetics are to Mendel as the falling apple is to Newton and gravity.
And this arrived from Larry Cohen from the United States.
My answer is that the monk Gregor Mendel is considered to be the father of modern genetics. His fundamental work is still studied by every student in the life sciences to this day.
But there can only be one winner, and this time it is Brian Candle from England, who sent us this answer.
Gregor Mendel was born into a poor peasant family in 1822. He went on to enter a monastery in Brunn, famous for its scientific study. In due course he became the abbot and carried out many experiments with peas. He analysed thousands of them, and eventually he formulated what are known as the laws of heredity. Two key terms in genetics also come from Mendel, dominance and recessiveness. However much experimenting he may have done with peas, Gregor Mendel was certainly no pea brain.
Congratulations, and your prize is in the post. And there's a novelty. As we've been getting more and more answers from you, and March was an absolute record, starting from next month we'll be drawing one main and three second prizes instead of one. So for our April competition, we are asking you to list all Czech Nobel Prize winners. I won't tell you how many there are, but we want the complete list. The address is Radio Prague, 12099 Prague, the Czech Republic, or English at radio.cz. And the deadline is April the 30th. And now on to our annual competition. For this year's competition, you need to listen carefully. We are asking you to identify three sounds from our archive. If you have visited the Czech capital, you are almost certain to recognize the first sound, and even if you have never been here, you might well be able to guess.
Ukončete prosím výstup a nástup, dveře se zavírají.
The second sound collage captures one of the most dramatic moments in Prague's 20th century history, a moment when the building from which Radio Prague broadcasts played a major role.
Americans and English, help us. We need guns. There are too many Germans.
Рада говори, Красная армия. Нам нужна ваша помощь.
And the third sound comes from one of the symbols of Prague's old town. If you recognize all three sounds, please send us a few sentences inspired by each of them. And even if you recognize just one or two, do get in touch. You still have a good chance of winning a prize. Please send us your answer by the 18th of June 2006 to Radio Prague, 12099 Prague, the Czech Republic, or to our email address, english@radio.cz. The first prize is a week for two here in Prague, enjoying the comfort of the Hotel Falkensteiner Maria Prague in the heart of the old city. And that's it for Mailbox for today. Thanks for listening, and I'll be back next week.
Thank you, Pavla, for that edition of Mailbox. And this week's letter from Prague is brought to you by our David Vaughan, who remembers the extraordinary Jaroslava Mozarová.
Radio Prague has lost a good friend. A Renaissance woman with hugely diverse talents, Jaroslava Mozarová was not just a doctor, one of the country's top burn specialists, but also a highly respected literary translator and writer, and an accomplished diplomat and politician. In the years since the fall of communism, she had been ambassador to Australia, a prominent member of the Czech Senate, and president of the UNESCO General Conference. Jaroslava Mozarová was also the only candidate who posed a real challenge to Václav Klaus in the last Czech presidential elections. Her translations of English literature, most famously the novels of Dick Francis, are highly acclaimed. Last week, she lost her battle against cancer. In recent years, Jaroslava Mozarová often helped us out at Radio Prague, whether as a senator lobbying to remind fellow politicians of our existence, or in giving us references when we applied for grants. The support of someone with her authority was worth its weight in gold. And her love for radio was genuine. Working for UNESCO in the struggle to make education more accessible, she campaigned to set up radio stations in parts of Africa, where for many education was nothing but a dream. As she put it, not everyone can read or even interpret a visual image, but the spoken word can reach each and every one of us. I last interviewed Dr. Mozarová just a few days before she died. As I had often done before, I went to see her at her comfortably lived-in flat overlooking Lednar Park. She was already very ill, her weight down to 35 kilos, but in recent weeks she had positively encouraged me and other radio colleagues to visit her. "I hate being stuck at home," she explained. "I hate the lack of stimulus." At a time when many people would give up, she was a lively and engaging interview partner. We talked about a little-known aspect of her work for UNESCO, on a committee struggling for the release of political prisoners. It was a fascinating insight into delicate behind-the-scenes diplomatic work that never hits the headlines. A few weeks earlier, I had interviewed Dr. Mozarová about her memories as a doctor of treating Jan Palach in January 1969. The 20-year-old student was dying in hospital after setting himself alight on Prague's Wenceslas Square in a desperate protest against the apathy that followed the Soviet invasion 5 months before. She told me that he had been clearly reconciled to the fact that he was going to die, and she could feel his inner strength and conviction that he had not betrayed his conscience. Visiting Jaroslava Mozarová herself just before she died, I had very much the same feeling.
Thank you, David. Well, now we'll listen to Jaroslava Mozarová's last interview with Radio Prague that David recorded with her just 2 weeks ago. She had a long association with UNESCO, the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization. In 1999, she was appointed president of the UNESCO General Conference, and she remained active in the organization until her death. She was convinced of the role that UNESCO could play, especially in education, and this was the subject of David's conversation with her.
Really, the aim of UNESCO is to improve the quality of life. It's not a political organization at all. It's not only science, education, and culture, but also democracy that UNESCO promotes. Most people associate UNESCO mainly with cultural heritage, but that is a mistake. It's important, of course. But the main pillar of UNESCO is education, access to education. When you hear the delegates from different parts of the world, different cultures, different traditions, there's one thing all of them agree on, and that is that the only tool for better or worse is education.
And how did you become involved initially in UNESCO?
Well, my first act that had something to do with UNESCO was right after the Velvet Revolution, when I, together with two other women, wrote a letter to the Minister of Culture to speed up the process of getting Prague listed on the UNESCO heritage list, lest we spoil the city. And I think we saved it. I think really UNESCO already prevented some architectural crimes.
And for you personally, from this aspect of preserving the cultural heritage, you rapidly moved on to different aspects of and further aspects of UNESCO's work, didn't you?
I do share with my other colleagues the belief that access to education is most important, especially in Africa, because the areas where there are people, illiterate people, with no access to any kind of information is enormous. And the only way to improve the economical situation in such places, also in Asia and some places in South America, is for the people to get at least basic education and basic skills.
And so what practically is being done in the field of education?
Well, for instance, I keep supporting or promoting that money has to be spent for establishing municipality radios, because in the areas where people are illiterate, the spoken word is the only way of getting information across to the people. Vital information is how to prevent AIDS infection, where to get medical help, where to get basic education. Only the spoken word, nothing else. Not even pictures will help. People are not used to reading pictures or taking them in.
And so UNESCO will help to provide the framework and the know-how to make these local or municipal stations, radio stations,
yes,
work.
Yes, exactly. UNESCO always cooperates with the country concerned, of course. So the country concerned has to express a wish to have this or that. But the countries are also encouraged to develop, for instance, the network of the radios. And in areas where it's been already introduced, it really works.
You mention the fact that UNESCO is, since the fall of communism, since the end of the Cold War, has focused more on democracy and the principles of democracy. As somebody from a previously communist country, what did you try to bring in to the General Conference as president from your experience of having lived through totalitarianism?
I think I didn't bring so much to the General Conference as to the work of the Committee for Conventions and Recommendations, the so-called CRAE. It sounds uninteresting, but it's in fact a committee which deals with gross violations of human rights. And it is very important that I am there and that my Hungarian colleague is there, because it's very important that there be members that experienced the totalitarian regime, yet are free to talk about it now and know how to interpret the letters from the governments, you know, which are so similar, no matter if it's the far left or far right, the language.
How do you deal with these cases, with these governments? Well, it must be a very difficult path to tread if you're actually trying to help the people who they're imprisoning.
If you have the experience how a totalitarian regime functions, how it reacts, how far can you go, then it's much easier to cope. But the main value of this committee, as compared to others, because there are, of course, many agencies dealing with human rights, the main special value of this committee is that it deals strictly confidentially. So when a totalitarian country releases a prisoner of conscience or improves prison conditions or allows a discriminated group of young people to enter university, no one brags about it. There's not a single word in the media about it, so that the country concerned doesn't lose face in the country nor internationally.
And you have a background as a diplomat as well, don't you? So this must help enormously in this kind of very delicate negotiation.
And also I have a good knowledge of people, which is important.
Do you think that worldwide, that respect for human rights is improving? Obviously there was a wave of optimism with the fall of communism and totalitarian regimes. Do you think, are you generally speaking optimistic?
Yes, because you see, I was on the committee, the CRAE committee, the key committee that I care so much about, before I became president of the General Conference. And now I came back again. And I can see the small, the slow move towards democracy in a number of countries where you would not expect it at all. But there was no dialogue before, there is a dialogue now. And we've had releases from places you wouldn't believe.
Can you name some of the countries where there have been significant improvements?
I mean, I can tell you a story, but I cannot tell you where it happened.
Tell me that story then.
Okay. So there was a case of a prisoner who was sentenced to 30 years imprisonment under very harsh conditions in a faraway country. Gradually, as we applied pressure, the prison conditions improved very much. The person in question could receive books, reading material. She could even receive food parcels from her family. She was moved from a windowless cell to a cell with a window. She was allowed walks in the yard. Now my colleagues from the democratic countries that never went through what we went through said, well, so what? They didn't think these concessions were great, but I realized how in that particular case, in that particular country, how enormous these concessions were. And I said, well, this is a country where it would be worth it to visit the country and see what one could achieve. So I went, and I was afraid I would be introduced to the local National Commission for UNESCO, shown the sites, and sent home. That could have happened, and never again would a visit to the country concerned be approved of. But no, I was received by three government members, the last one being the most important one, as I was told. And he held a long speech where he explained the difficult situation of his multi-ethnic country and that they are working on a democratic constitution, but that they have to go slowly, that if there was a drastic change, it would be bloody. And I believe he was right. Taking into consideration all the facts of the country, I would think he was right. At the end of his speech, he said, as far as the matter you are interested in is concerned, it will be discussed. That was all. No names mentioned, nothing. Then I held a long speech that our countries have, of course, a very different cultural and political background and traditions, and that our opinions, of course, differ. But there are things that we could learn from them, as, for instance, respect for old age. And at the end of my speech, I said that I trust in the generosity of his government. The person was released in 10 days. Even now I have goose flesh when I think about it. In 10 days. It was, of course, understood by both sides that there will be no press conference, no nothing. Silence.
When I spoke a while ago to another Czech diplomat and writer like yourself, Viktor Fischl, he told me that one of the things that he's done in both his work as a writer and a diplomat is you have to be able to think yourself into the mind of the person sitting at the table opposite you when you're negotiating, when you're talking to a politician, for example. In cases like that, in cases of totalitarian countries which are really moving so slowly towards reform, can you sympathize or empathize with these people you're talking with?
I cannot sympathize, but I can understand, which is the difference. I mean, in the case that I was now talking about, I really believe that the minister who was saying how that they could not afford an abrupt change towards democracy, I'm sure he was right.
Dr. Mozorova, thank you very much indeed for talking to me.
You are very welcome.
That was David Vaughan talking to Yaroslava Mozorova, who died last week. You can find more conversations with her and more articles about her at our website, www.radio.cz/en. If you'd like to contact us, please feel free to drop us an email at english@radio.cz. For now, I'm Jan Polkrovec. Thank you for listening.